Welcome to the Wolf Den, a podcast about the business and future of podcasting. My name is Jeff Ulrich. I am your host. I am the CEO of Midroll Media. I am here with Alex Bloomberg.
Nice to be here.
Alex, for those of you who don't know, I'm going to bring out my bio sheet here. We've got Alex has been a producer on This American Life since 1999. He co-founded the Planet Money podcast and radio series in conjunction with NPR and This American Life. It kicked off in 2008 with an hour-long investigation into the subprime mortgage crisis called The Giant Pool of Money, and was named one of the decade's top 10 pieces of journalism by New York University. You did a successful Kickstarter for Planet Money that I want to talk about, the T-shirt project.
I'm wearing the T-shirt right now.
I know. I noticed that. It's wonderful. And it was one of the most successful Kickstarters probably of all time, right? You tried to do 2,500 units and went 25,000?
Then Neil Young kicked our ass. No, but you heard about that, right?
No, I didn't.
Oh, he just raised $5 million on Kickstarter.
Oh, my God.
For his, like, new music
right,
thing.
Right.
But, no, it was, I mean, by public radio standards, it was, like, I think one of the most successful Kickstarters around. Yeah, definitely. We raised almost $600,000
wow.
on Kickstarter. Yeah.
So, thanks for joining,
Thank
Alex.
You for having me.
You've listened to the show, which
yes,
is how we got connected.
Yeah, exactly. I found you through the Wolf Den.
Yeah, uh-huh. And you sent an email through like our contact form.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Because I couldn't get your email address. Yeah. So yeah. I was, because I've been kicking around the idea of sort of like, you know, for a long time, I feel like there's a way that we could be doing sort of like podcasting better inside of the public media world.
Right.
And I'd sort of been kicking around for a while the idea of starting a business that would do podcasting, but sort of with maybe taking investment from some public radio stations, taking outside investment. And then I was looking at, like, I was like, does that even exist? And then I found out about Earwolf, and then I found out that you guys have this podcast about the business of
right.
podcasting. I was like, well, this is exactly what I need to, thank you, internet, it's amazing. So, and I was like, how many people listen to this?
Right.
It's perfect for me.
Well,
would-be podcast entrepreneurs are there out there?
Apparently there's about 2012. Because that's how many people listen to the show. Well, you have a plane to catch.
Yes,
I do. We're actually going to have a shorter than normal show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to just kind of get into it,
do
actually.
It. Mm-hmm.
You know, the one thing, and I know I've told you this personally, but like your series, The Giant Pool of Money, was life-changing, I think. It really was.
Thanks.
People who had no understanding of financial anything, much less what was going on in 2008, really felt like they were able to identify and connect with and understand what was
right.
going on based on what you guys did. So thank you and congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks.
But so what is it that you've seen in the last 6 years now, right? I mean, it's 2008, that led you to the point of you're saying that like podcasting is something that you want to invest in?
First of all, like, I think there's just this amazing potential to, like, I think it's a great medium for the kind of journalism that I like to do, and specifically for journalism. I feel like there's a great underused potential in podcasting.
Right.
Like, I think if you look at most of the podcasts out there, there's like awesome, obviously, comedy podcasts and
sure.
there's like political podcasts, but there's not as much just sort of like audio journalism, and I feel like that's something that like. I think there's a huge opportunity for that. And that sort of came out of the giant pool of money and sort of the stuff that we've been doing subsequently where you're like, well, if I can talk for an hour about mortgage finance
right.
and people find it interesting,
yeah.
then like, that's awesome, right? You can do what can't you cover?
Yeah.
You know? So it's sort of really, really, you know, for a long time before the giant pool of money came out, I had been talking about like, I really think there's something here, but it's all about, you know, collateralized debt obligations, you know, but we were able to figure out how to make it interesting, how to find the people, you know, that sort of make it interesting. And that's what we've been doing subsequently with Planet Money. And I feel like that's a trick that you can sort of replicate in a lot of different areas. Like, I feel like there's, you know, all sorts of like, you name it, like there's, you know, tech and sort of, culture. I feel like there's could be some sports, some education. I mean, there's just a bunch
yeah.
of different subject areas where you could
Absolutely.
Sort of do that, you
right.
know? And then for a long time, at least within within public media, the business model wasn't really there. You know, how do you, so, okay, it's expensive to do that kind of journalism, as you and I have been talking about. Yeah. Like, it's not, you know, you've got production budgets of like $400,000 to $750,000 to do a weekly show that fields like a team of reporters.
Yeah.
So how do you support that
you know,
digitally? And part of it for me is sort of like, and I feel like now there's sort of a way of sort of like, so some of the things that I've learned over the last couple of years, I feel like, have give me a theory about how you would do that, basically. Yeah.
Well, I mean, because you essentially have like three acts, right, in your career. Uh-huh. You kind of have the This American Life part of it, where that's all you did.
Right.
Then you transition into continuing to work on This American Life, but then also doing Planet Money.
Right.
And so what's next? Like, what's the third?
So what I'm out here trying to do right now, and what I've been, you and I have been talking about a lot about, is I'm raising money to start a podcasting company. And what exactly the form, you know, I feel like I've been at it officially for 3 weeks, you know, trying to put together a business plan, trying to put together an investor deck, and coming out and sort of talking to people. And I got a lot of really great feedback from various people and like a high level of interest. But, you know, it's like, you know, especially talking to some of the Silicon Valley folks, some of them are sort of like, yeah, whatever you want to do. And some of them are like, how are you going to,
we
want a hockey stick.
We want to know, right?
Yeah, we want an exit strategy. We want to, how do you get to $300 million so that you can sell it to somebody else and like what, how, and return our money.
And all the venture capitalists play hockey. Isn't it funny?
Yeah, they do. They all play, they all want a hockey stick. For those would-be podcast entrepreneurs that don't know what we're talking about, we're talking about the graph that shows your earnings going like flat and then like hockey sticking up.
Up and to the right.
Yeah.
Up and to the right, up and to the right.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I've been doing. And like, it's been a crazy week. Like, I've met with a bunch of really interesting people, and there's been just a lot of just general interest and excitement, but it's like sort of left me almost more confused than when I came out here about like what my path should be.
Well, and this season, we kind of are looking at the relaunch of the show as seasons, and we're focusing on builders, you know, people who are trying to build things, rather than like we did a lot of stuff with talent previously.
Right.
And so the thing that has kept coming up on every single conversation is the blurred lines between talent, producer, and entrepreneur. And I think that's something that the listeners, I think I would love to have them hear from you, how you're approaching entrepreneurship as someone who did come, you're now covering all your bases, right? You started off purely as producer.
Right.
You evolved into also then talent, and now you're trying to do the entrepreneur thing. Where's your head at around that stuff?
Well, I mean, I feel like part of, I'm coming at this also like as part of like, you know, from this tradition of sort of public media and journalism, and like the conversation in journalism is always like, what's going to happen to a profession? You know, like what are the business models? Like everything is crumbling and people are scrambling, and it's an exciting time. And so, but I feel like the thing that like everybody's sort of realizing is that there's almost no distinction now between you to be successful in journalism. You have to have some sort of entrepreneurial instincts,
right?
You know, because everybody really is. There's not the gigantic. I mean, there's a couple big, huge players. Like there's always going to be a New York Times, LA Times. There's always going to be some of those big players where you can find a home.
Right.
But even within that, you're sort of like, you're sort of want to think about your own brand. And there's like, and there's, so A, it's more necessary because you need to be thinking about like, how am I going to generate the revenue necessary to do the work that I love to do?
Right.
But then it's also, there's way more opportunities now for that kind of stuff. Like with social media and everything like that, everybody is, I mean, it's like a hateful, horrible thing to say, but everybody is really sort of their own brand.
Right.
And
hateful that, as it is, doesn't mean it's not true.
It's not, it's true, and it's exciting in a certain way, because it does, if you do have a cool idea of sort of like engaging your audience and talking to your audience, now you can do it.
Yeah,
There's no one to stop you, and it's awesome. Mm-hmm. So when I think about sort of like, so one of the big things that I have been sort of sitting here doing the stuff that I'm doing at Planet Money and sort of seeing like, okay, everything's digital, everything's on demand. It's, you know, it's an on-demand audio world right now.
Right.
We're calling it a podcast now. It'll probably, I don't know what we're going to call it in the future, but that's the, that's the unit, right? Like there's
going to be. On-demand audio has my support.
Yes.
At least to transition us away from podcast.
Right. And then, you know, but from within the public radio world, there are still it's still very much about like selling the radio ads as a way of sort of generating support for the entire system.
Right.
And that's still the fire hose of sort of listeners, and that's where they can get the big bucks on the ad sales and stuff like that. But I feel like there's a – so what we found at Planet Money, we did this thing is that there's a way of sort of melding these two things mm-hmm. in a digital way, and I feel like that could maybe be a really sustainable model for
– And yeah. where did that come from? Did that come from you? Did it come from someone else? Who was – like who pushed the T-shirt project agenda?
That was me. So okay. it was Adam, my co-founder, Adam Davidson's idea. He mm-hmm. came in a meeting and was like, I feel like we should – do a thing.
Actually, so do you mind
talking about that? Yeah, so let me set it up. So we had this, so at Planet Money, our goal was the global economy. We wanted to study, you know, we do podcasts about the global economy. We do a whole bunch of different stuff. We've done a bunch of stuff in the housing market. We'd always done sort of like a participatory mm-hmm. journalistic thing. So yeah. like during the height of the, like sort of when everybody was talking about like toxic assets on the banks, you know, in 2009, right after the worst parts of the financial crisis, it's all about toxic assets. And we actually bought a toxic asset. We bought a sliver of a toxic asset to see what it actually was. What is it?
Yeah.
And sort of that's sort of what our MO is, to sort of take these really abstract things that are in the news, but nobody knows what the hell they are.
Yeah.
And like trying to like actually make them concrete. And we sort of like looked at a toxic asset, and it's, lo and behold, it's made up of individual mortgages in individual cities, and we found people
right,
who were like who were living in the houses things, that yeah. was in our toxic asset.
Yeah.
So that was so we've done that. And Adam came in one day and he was like, you know what we should do? We should make a T-shirt, because a T-shirt is this really crazy. It tells the story of a global economy. Like it's made, you know, it's a simple yeah. thing. Everybody owns it, but it is the world of it's this hidden world of production behind that simple garment that is like worldwide, literally.
Sure. Right.
And there's just so many interesting stories to tell within that T-shirt. And so that was the idea. So we did it. So we said, okay, we're going to do that. And then we just like, you know, sort of spun our wheels for 3 years. Like we were like, we had the idea and we like got up and started doing it. And then we were like way in over our heads. And then Europe happened and we had to cover the Europe crisis.
Right.
And so we sort of like, then people had babies. And so, but then.
And it was not a small project.
It's not a small project.
It's not like you were doing yeah. it over 2 weekends.
Yeah. So then we like sort of, but it was always in the back of our mind. And so like we were, so then finally we figured out a way to sort of do it, which is sort of piggybacking on basically there was like, once we started getting into it, we realized that there's just no way to key into the global supply chain at the scale we were.
Right.
Like, you know, we're like five-person public radio unit.
Yeah.
We can't just... So we partnered with this company to basically sort of like... We got them to sort of tell us who their suppliers were, and we sort of piggybacked on their big order.
Sure.
And that was the way we got in.
Right.
And we did the project. And so the idea was we were going to sell the shirt to our listeners, and then the shirt would tell the story of its own creation. And we would do a whole series of reporting about how the shirt got made. And then we would do this big website that sort of, you know, showed. And so we needed to figure out like, and we had this question, how are we going to get the money to like it was like $20,000 or something
yeah.
like that. So we had a question. A, we had no idea how many people would want a T-shirt, would buy a T-shirt when we finally
right.
made them.
Right.
And then we didn't have the money,
mm-hmm.
right? So because it's public radio, there's no risk capital,
yeah.
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's your budget and you don't have
right.
you don't it's have $20,000 for like
yeah.
T-shirts that nobody maybe right. will ever buy. So so we came up with this idea of like, well, let's do a Kickstarter. And what we'll do is we'll announce it and then we'll send our listeners, if they want the shirt, they'll go to the Kickstarter page.
Basically pre-order it,
right? But that way, we'll have the money and we'll know how many to make. And so we did that. We sort of did the initial reporting and stuff. We put together this podcast and we said, this is it. We're doing it, people. Go to Kickstarter if you want your shirt. And the response was insane. Like mm-hmm. the response was we had 20,000 people show up and buy it. The shirts, many of them bought more than one shirt. We sold in the end over 25,000 shirts.
Wow.
And we made $590,000
yeah.
on Kickstarter. And so that was exciting. And then that enabled us to do the project and to build out this amazing video, which is one of the most sort of editorially satisfying projects I've ever worked on. planetmoney.com/shirt.
I was going to yeah. say, you have yeah. to go. I mean, I'm not a journalist, so I'm allowed to kind of be a homer.
Uh-huh.
But you know, like we're Scott's recording his 5th anniversary Comedy Bang Bang uh-huh. today, as
yeah.
you know, and like I'm able to have pride around stuff like that. You know,
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
it's really exciting, it's really cool.
No,
I'm gonna sit in there, and even though like we're just friends and we're new friends, watching that video, like going through that website and following the process, I felt so proud of you.
That's awesome.
And like, I was so excited to even have a relationship with the kind of person who was capable of making this. It was amazing.
That's very kind. I mean, it was like, obviously it was more like, I was the sort of the center of the thing, but
I'm sure
like,
I know you had a team.
Yeah. And the team is amazing. You know what I mean? And like, you know, it looks beautiful. The shooting was beautiful. The reporting was amazing. But it was like, it definitely was like, sort of like, it was one of the most complicated, you know, sort of structural nuts to crack, and we were doing, and it was really fun.
It was very entrepreneurial.
It was really entrepreneurial. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, could have been more, but
right.
we're not allowed to do it. But anyway, like for example, we could have sold some T-shirts on that site.
Right.
Anyway, but it was like this amazing editorial thing, and it felt really, really good to pull it off. And it's already won a bunch of sort of like, you know, journalistic prizes and stuff.
Right.
But beyond that, it opened up this door of like, oh, this is how you fund these things. Mm-hmm. Because what it told me is that like you have a core group of listeners, and they are engaged in what you're, you know, your product, right? They're engaged in your storytelling and what you're talking about, your subject, and you as a personality
on
who's doing the podcast,
right?
And if you give them an opportunity to come along with you as you're mm-hmm. investigating something, and you give them a way to buy into that, then they will do it, and happily. Like, the thing that was great about the T-shirt project is we did not once say, hey, you know, and by the way, if you buy this T-shirt, it helps us keep the lights on, you know, like, you know, our transmission, our bandwidth costs are, you know what I mean? We didn't have to do any of that public radio bullshit.
Right.
To and people were happily handing over the $25 because they wanted to be part of it. And it was like, it was an utterly honest transaction. It's like when you go to a restaurant, you want the food, and so you buy the food. The restaurant's not like, hey, by the way, it helps us put these tables. You see these tablecloths? We only if you buy the food, we get to put the tablecloths out. You know, that never happens in the real world.
Right.
So, and that felt much more like that. You know what I mean? It was like, hey, people, come along with us. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was exciting. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, so part of what I think would be the formula here for like sort of especially narrative journalism in a podcast form would be, you know, you get an audience to a certain size, and then part of it is through ads. And then part of it is through this audience engagement where you build into your business plan, like one or two sort of like
pathways into participating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That has a component that you can buy in, but it'll be, even if you don't buy in, you still enjoy it. Like lots of people like the T-shirt project, even if they didn't have the T-shirt, but it was like, there's this way of buying in, you know, literally buying in. And if you create those opportunities, then I feel like then you can make, they become very, very self-sufficient.
That's an amazing
profitable
story, amazing project. It's a great representation of what's possible, like you said, in terms of funding projects and full shows. As I mentioned, we're a little short on time. And I think we typically do what? Average 2-hour conversations? We don't have short conversations.
Yeah.
I like to think they're interesting too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
It's a shame that we don't have more time. But the thing that I think, or one of the things that I think will be really interesting for the listeners is there's this safety that's associated with public radio.
Yeah.
And up until recently, that safety was never kind of breached. You know, people weren't leaving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm going to have Krista Tippett on. And that's someone who kind of like started to do her own thing with On Being. But like by and large, it seems like there's an apprehension on behalf of people who are part of, I'll just call it public radio, because everyone knows that NPR does not actually do This American Life, right?
Right.
So I won't say NPR, but so you're kind of, you're doing something that is actually kind of rogue in a way. Not rogue in a bad way, but you're now one of the only people who's saying, like, I'm going to leave the sanctity and the comfort of this organization that I love, that I've been a part of for a long time. I've done work that's changed my life and the lives of many to do something on my own. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about that.
Well, it's fucking terrifying. I mean, like, you know, it's like really, really scary. And I have not left yet. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I am still in the employee of This American Life, and like will, you know, maintain that for as long as it takes to get this thing up and launched, whatever it is. But And to be clear, like my sincere hope is, and like I've talked to a lot of public radio stations, that they will be investors in this new project. So it is. So to me, I'm sort of thinking of it as sort of like bringing public radio and public media in general into this digital place that they need to be anyway.
That's a fair distinction.
Yeah. But
I think Rogue is maybe a little strong.
Rogue is fine because I want it to be a for-profit company.
Right.
You know, and I'm out here in Silicon Valley sort of like looking, you know, I was in LA now, but I was up in San Francisco before and like, you know, talking to people who invest on those terms.
Sort of like,
angel investors who are sort of like looking to have this thing that they're funding become profitable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Big returns. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's also true, and it's scary. I mean, that's really scary. Like public radio is very, very comfortable. Like it's like, you know, there's not a lot of, there's like, if you can get to where, you know, what you're doing, it's a very, very sort of safe place, but that safety is illusion. You know what I mean? It's not like they are like every other entity. They need to make money to survive.
Yeah.
And for a long time, life has been very, very good for public radio. I think because they've been spared a lot of the disruptive things that have been happening in other forms of media, right? Like public television had a much harder time because like cable came along and like just started like decimating their audience.
Yeah, you're over.
And they've had to rebuild themselves as sort of like, okay, we're like everybody else, like we're all about content, you know, and we gotta make good content, otherwise people aren't gonna watch us. So that's what they've been doing. And obviously, newspapers the same thing, and so that change is now happening with radio, where like it's finally coming to the cars. You know, the iOS is going to be in the car. It's all like your Bluetooth syncing to your phone. So there's going to be, you know, the zillions of listening options in the car that, you know, that you have everywhere else. So that's going to be a big disruption for public radio. So I feel like this is something that to me also feels like. On one hand, it feels like leaving a safe place. On the other hand, it feels like that safe place is not really safe.
Right.
And I got to figure something else out for me and for the good of the system as a whole.
Right.
That being said, I feel like in a weird way, times have never been better for like content makers.
Yeah.
You know, like if you know what you're doing and you're making good content that people like and you can get an audience, like
regardless of where your home is.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great place to be. And so that's the other thing, is that sort of like, I feel like, you know, I've been talking to all these like people, the Silicon Valley people, and all they want is like for you to have a platform. They're like, what's your platform? Because that's how that's what scales, right?
Yeah.
That's the hockey stick.
Right.
Hockey stick platform. And I'm saying like, I don't have a platform. Like I'm not going to go head to head with Apple.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's not my, I don't know how to code, but a lot of the problem with a lot of these platforms is there's nothing to put on them right now. Like your company and like the stuff from public radio aside, like there's just not very much, you know, Slate, there's a couple of producers out there, but if you compare it to like the video world.
Sure. It's a whole different thing.
This, you know, it's like an entire universe that's populated. And here we're just like, it's the frontier here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I feel like there's room for lots more content creators.
I think that's something that is both like a strength of Earwolf and Midroll, and also a source of like a lot of anxiety and insecurity for me, is that we bring resources and efforts that maybe don't scale on a creator level to creators so that they can both, you know, have people listen to what they do and also make money from it, but still be in charge of their show and like basically independent.
Right.
You know, I mean, like with Scott it was my co-founder in Earwolf, but Earwolf has like a contract with Comedy Bang Bang. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not part of Earwolf. It's a show that we have like this long-term relationship with. And our whole model is like the idea of the producer, the idea of like the support organization isn't necessarily going to go away, but it's not going to rule the day the way it did, I'll just say 20 years ago, where like, you know, if a TV network didn't want to make your show, you had nowhere to go. You had no options. And then if they did make it, they owned basically the whole thing.
The whole thing, right. And you, so, that world is over.
That's, like, it's over, right?
Yeah.
So like what we offer is like, you own all the IP. We own the master files that we pay to produce, and that's it. And then we're essentially renting access to your show. Mm-hmm. And in exchange for that, we're going to give you a bigger audience and we're going to help you make money.
Right.
And it's that rental relationship that is what's allowed us to be successful, because we're not telling people, oh, you know what? It's ours.
Right.
Like, we're not saying the microphone is more important than the person.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, cause that would be ridiculous.
Yeah. Right.
But there are
and
people
it's
who
more
say
and more
that.
And I think that's like sort of like NPR has grown up in the situation where that was the case where right. like sort of, and it is still like they can make a better, they have a gigantic audience, right?
Sure.
So they have like 25 million listeners on a weekly yeah. basis or something
so
like
they
that.
Carry
so they
that.
can still say like, you come with us and we, right. we can introduce you to that,
Star
that
makers.
Audience.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, it's not like it's, you know, but then there's people outside the system who have that as well. Like Ira at This American Life has a million people on
right.
his podcast alone, you know,
yeah.
that you can just sort of like, so you have that distribution.
Oh yeah. I mean, if he yeah. mentions someone's podcast on
yeah.
the show, they're going to like,
they become
double their audience
sort
overnight.
Of profitable essentially.
Yeah.
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 And so there's that. So that's a real thing. So I feel like that's something that I think your situation is, I think the norm, you know,
right.
is certainly going to become the norm. My question for you is sort of, and this is something that I wrestle with a lot. Well, so let's say, you know, I go big, I have a little podcast network, right,
right.
that I'm starting, and it's like basically journalistic, narrative journalism based, right? So,
right.
So the one thing that I feel like I'm going to have that will be helpful is that like, there's not that many people who know how to do that kind mm-hmm. of storytelling, you know, journalistic storytelling.
Sure. Right.
So I'll be like sort of an editor or developer structure of that. So that will be sort of like one way that it'll get by, where it would be harder just to leave.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
Because like people like sort of want that relationship. But then I'm thinking like, how do you sort of like give the creator all the stuff that I would have wanted as
yeah.
a creator
right.
in my old, you know, I would have wanted some equity. I would have wanted something,
right.
you know, sort of like, but at the same time, make sure that you're protected from like, if they do blow up, that you as the person who sort of helped them and launched them
sure.
can get some of that. And I don't know what the answer is. Like, have you considered like, you know, sort of like changing that relationship or doing like spin-off, like individual entities around each show or something like that? What's the, you know?
I mean, there's definitely an argument to be made to say, at this point, we have Earwolf itself has enough people paying attention to it, enough of an audience. I mean, not NPR audience, mm-hmm. but certainly Ira audience,
mm-hmm.
To say, you know what, we're going to, and we have like really creative people who work with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have Matt Gourley is a producer,
yeah.
development producer. He's
yeah.
a genius. He's great. So we could say like, all right, well, Matt, like let's figure out a show. And let's cast it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can go to our friends over at UCB
right.
and we can pay three people $150 an episode
mm-hmm.
and we can give them an audience and we can help, you know, build something, but we're going to own the whole thing. You know,
right.
like it's
right.
a whole different relationship.
Uh-huh.
We could do that.
Right.
And I'm not saying that we never would. But for me, what's more interesting is continuing to invest in supporting the people who we already know are doing the things that we respect, that we want to be a part
yeah.
of. And so every penny goes into that.
But I guess what I'm wondering, isn't there some sort of middle ground? Like, is there a scenario where, let's say, you know, sort of like UCB, you know, talent, I don't know. So I don't know who, just somebody that you have your eye on is sort of like, oh, they'd be great. They'd be great with their own podcast, right?
Sure.
And we could sort of like support that, we could do that. And then basically, but what you would do, and I don't know, this is one of the things that I was thinking about, and I don't know if this is possible or not, but like, what if each show was its own sort of legal entity that they would own part of and you would own part of,
mm-hmm.
and then that way, and you just come to the terms that way. So they get 20%, you get 80% if,
right.
if you're making them the star. And if they're already the star, they get 80%, you
yeah,
get 20%,
yeah, yeah.
and everything in between.
Sure.
Is that a model that you've thought about?
Yeah, absolutely. I've thought about it more on a network level than on an individual show level.
Uh-huh.
It's harder. I mean, it's more people, it's more contracts, it's more everything.
Yeah, that's where your legal costs
come.
We were
that's
talking about legal costs.
And
I was thinking, though, that would be... I especially for the model that I'm thinking about, because I think this is sort of one of the things that I feel like, because necessarily the production costs are just so much
Absolutely.
Higher for what I'm talking
yeah, yeah.
about, you need that audience. Part of it is like, it's essential. Otherwise, it doesn't work as a business.
Sure.
And
right.
So, and that's scary. Like, sort of like that. Like, I'm factoring in sort of a pretty. I mean, it's both untested and tested. Like, if you look at public radio, that's their business model, and it's actually been very successful.
Yeah.
You know, when you actually think about it,
right.
And it's never been easier to get your audience to give you money than
yeah.
it is today. So, in a certain way, there's like, my assumptions are much lower than what public radio gets
yeah.
right now. So, but anyway, like you need the talent, you know, to use another hateful Hollywood word, in invested
yeah.
in that. And so it makes, so it seems like it might make sense to like have like these individual deals around each show, because the show is going to have to be making the pitch to its listeners
mm-hmm.
every, you know, built into its DNA.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. So I wrestle with that though,
yeah.
because like I get a lot of advice that says like, don't do that. Like, that's a bad idea.
You why know? And why? What's the argument against?
The argument against is sort of like, it's too much hassle.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much legal work, paperwork. And then you know, you've got like, you know, if you got like an old school lawyer, they're like, why you get, you know, you're the one, you're the network. Why
sure.
are you
why would you
away?
Give? Well, yeah. so don't listen
yeah,
to
yeah.
that.
Yeah, no.
Okay,
I mean, that's. I feel like that's crazy.
It's different.
Right.
I think everybody needs to have much more of a. At least this is. I swear to God, this is the truth. I always approach it not to say, well, what am I bringing to the table? Therefore, what am I worth? But I always look like, what's the other person bringing to the table, and how much can I give them for that?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different mindset
right.
than like, I have it all, and how much, what's the little piece that I'll give you
right.
to for the privilege of working with me?
Right.
It's more like, wait, what can they do all by themselves
right.
that they don't need me for
right.
at all?
Right.
And let's back out the other way and
uh-huh.
say, well, how can I make what they're doing better? How can I make their lives easier? How can I make it so that they wouldn't want to do it with anyone else? They wouldn't want to do it alone
mm-hmm.
because the combination of value to price is so reasonable
right.
that they would love to work with us.
Yeah, yeah.
And then present that to the most talented people in the world.
Right.
That's kind of what I've done.
Right.
The thing that is different, and so here I'll open up my brain,
uh-huh.
talk about things I probably typically wouldn't share, is that the relationship between like Earwolf and comedians is going to be different than the relationship of your network to journalists, say.
Right, right.
Because a comedian can be like, oh, that's going to be my fourth priority.
Yeah.
And I'll do it like, you know, it'll take me an hour and 20 minutes a week, including travel time.
Right.
To do this thing.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. I'm not going to mention it on Conan. I'm going to be mentioning my TV show.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? It can be a very successful fourth option.
Yes.
Whereas you're asking people to essentially make it what their career
is
about
their
for
entire thing.
A period
Absolutely.
Of time.
Yeah.
And I think in that regard, when I look at like, do I ever want to expand beyond comedy? I wouldn't show up with the same mindset.
Right.
I would say like, okay, we're building a business together.
Uh-huh.
It's not the same thing. Like Nerd Poker, it's like six people who love playing Dungeons and Dragons together, but
uh-huh.
they're not going to coordinate around right. making it anything more than that.
Right.
That's our job.
Right, right.
So I'm agreeing with you, actually. Like
right.
the people who say it's too hard or
uh-huh.
for what you're trying to do, that's the
Each
best
show,
way to do
I'm
it.
Talking, like to be successful, the most successful version of this is that like in 5 years, there's like, we have, you know, like, I don't know, 5 to 10 Planet Money's, This American Lives, Radio
sure.
Labs, like stuff like that on that have that number of listeners and are that sort of successful. And that, but then each of those brands by itself has to be the thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it has to be a show. And so that's why I feel like that might be the best model.
I'm reading a really good
book. That's
why
book. I'm like, that's why I feel like I have high, got to build
high,
in high
legal costs.
Costs
yeah.
this thing. Yeah.
I'm reading a book. I've become a victim of my own habits where I ferociously read about entrepreneurship and startups. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I love reading Suster and Feld and Wilson and I read Clay Christensen all the time. But I haven't done any of what I used to do, which was like more big company, like regular business type of reading.
Mm-hmm.
I eschew like the typical like Fortune 500 CEO.
Yeah.
I just kind of assume they don't know what they're doing and that it's different from what I'm doing.
Right.
But my dad gave me a book called The Outsiders
mm-hmm.
that was published by Harvard Business Review. I actually don't remember the author. And it's talking about unusual but the most successful CEOs. And there's
mm-hmm.
8 people who are profiled. And one of them is Katherine Graham from the Washington Post.
Uh-huh.
And it's a fascinating chapter. I mean, the whole book is like is really, really, really good. But the reason I'm bringing it up is that that every single CEO in that book focus on a couple of the same things, even mm-hmm. though they were all kind of living in their own and operating their own industries. And it was decentralized for the most part. All the companies were decentralized, where they placed a lot of equity and a lot of trust and resources in the hands of individual operators and managers.
Right.
And that's essentially what you're saying, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that you want to have like a fairly lean corporate structure,
yeah,
but that loosely is supportive mm-hmm. of these different people who are essentially a collective, who are doing their own things with shared, and it's a shared equity because you're bringing some of the value and they're bringing some of the value.
Right.
Does that sound?
Absolutely. And I feel like, and to different people, like I'm bringing more or less value, you right. know, sort of like.
So the deals would be different.
The deals would be different. And like some people are going to sort of be like, I'll be bringing a lot of resources. I'll be bringing a lot of like structuring advice, and I'll be bringing a lot of sort of organizational, you know, yeah. capability,
right.
you know, to, but then to other people, they're, you know, they've got huge Twitter feeds and stuff like that, and they can work at a different, you know, I mean, there's different deals to be done each time. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like a continuum of yeah. value. Well, Alex, it's yeah. been a pleasure.
Thank you.
But we're running out of time. I don't want you to miss your flight because of me. But for those of you who are interested, go watch the video that we're about to record at midroll.com or earwolf.com. Where I ask Alex a couple more questions, and then you'll see him leave for the airport. So thank you again for
Thanks
coming.
Thanks so much. It was
and,
really fun.
And until next time, happy podcasting.
Thank you.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio, boom.com. The wolf dead.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Reza Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.